report to transporter room 3.
O'Brien here.
I need you in transporter room 3.
This is the captain. Meet me in transporter room 3.
Join us in transporter room 3.
Captain, we're headed for transporter room 3.
This is your favorite transporter room, isn't it?
You're listening to Transporter Room 3 with your hosts, Phil Perello and Scott Galora.
Energize.
Welcome to another episode of Transporter Room 3 and happy 35th anniversary to Star Trek The Next Generation. Mr. Scott, how are you?
I'm all right. I don't know, Phil. These anniversaries, it's like, I don't think I'm getting any older, and yet we keep ticking them off. Like, we must have celebrated the 25th anniversary on this podcast 10 years ago.
Oh, God, I don't. Yeah. If you would have told me 35 years ago while watching the 25th anniversary of Star Trek, if you would have told me that I would be co-hosting a Star Trek podcast, I would have been like, cool, what's a podcast? Two, is it cool? And three, wait, what's a podcast?
And four, oh, why did I waste my life? So what was that? Remember we were both at New York Comic Con?
Yeah.
And it was some anniversary, but The Next Generation cast were doing their reunion tour, and they were in New York City.
Was it the 25th?
Could that have been the? I don't know. I don't.
Is it 2012?
Wow, could it have been that long ago? Shatner was the moderator, right?
Yes.
And I think Delancey sat in for Frakes. Frakes couldn't make it. Maybe. Does that sound right?
Frakes couldn't make it.
Maybe Delancey sat in for Will Wheaton. Maybe that's what it was. I don't know.
Wasn't Whedon the moderator and people gave him shit?
It's such a fond memory. We can't even recall the basic details.
It's on our phones. We can check later.
Anyway, so many anniversaries, right?
Do you remember where you were when you first watched Next Gen?
Oh, yeah. We've probably talked about this many times. But I had just gone away to college. I was like, maybe it had been my freshman year of college for like a month at that point, maybe. And we like went down to like the common room, but that's where a TV was. No iPhones or devices back then. And sat in the common room and watched Encounter at Farpoint. Like, I still remember it very clearly. And then like talking to people about it the next day at my job at the library and stuff, you know, like, yeah, like Riker doesn't want the captain beaming down to other planets, man. That's cool. Stuff like that, you know?
Right.
So now you were saying when we were texting earlier, you were saying that back then you couldn't even get it on like local Erie, Pennsylvania TV, right?
My memory is somewhat foggy about that, but I remember watching most of it on like Saturday afternoons, like the first two seasons on the Cleveland affiliate WUAB.
Right. Okay.
And then I remember they were doing syndicated runs around season 5 in like at like 4 o'clock or 6 o'clock in the afternoons. It was hosted by a local Cleveland guy who was a Trek guy, and I would always watch those old episodes. But new episodes ran at 11:30 on Saturday nights on Erie's CBS affiliate WSEE, and I believe that was around season 3 is when they started, because that's when I remember taping Best of Both Worlds.
Okay, all right, yeah. So yeah, and obviously you're so much younger than me. You were a babe in the crib.
I was
basically
6 years old, going on 7, Scott.
Right, yeah,
and so I can't, just thinking about that is sending some weird chills down my spine.
So you got into Star Trek earlier than I did. That means
I was in it at a young age. The first Trek I ever watched was syndicated original series at my grandmother's house.
Yeah,
I don't know how I love. I wish I could memorialize my first ever viewing of it. You know,
I mean, you must owe it to your aunts. To see your aunt to some
degree,
yeah,
my
right?
aunts, my dad, my grandmother,
Oh, your grandmother too?
Yeah, my grandmother babysat us a lot, and we would watch original series, ironically, on our CBS affiliate when it was syndicated in the 80s.
Okay.
And I had this small child size, folding back porch chair, you know, like a checkered back.
Yeah.
And that was my Captain Kirk chair. And she had a TV that reminded me of the view screen. So that we would set that up, and I would sit in a chair in front of it like Captain Kirk, and she drew the buttons for me on the armrests.
That's so cool.
And she would pretend to be Uhura and come over to me like, "Ooh, Captain Kirk."
That's just great.
Teasing me, yeah. I was so uncomfortable with that. You're like, yuck, girls, you know?
Yeah. Oh, we're not supposed to show affection. We're men.
We're men.
So, I remember my dad watching the original series a little bit. It would be like that, and like Mission Impossible reruns would both be on.
Oh, that's great.
But I remember being like more freaked out by original series when I was little. Like,
oh, really?
But like the closing credits, the what's his face, the the Clint Howard creature whose face always shows up at the very end,
mm-hmm.
Like stuff like that. I just remember being like super weirded out by and. Like, I can remember like the episode where they get turned into, these aliens turn the whole crew into like sponges. And then the one guy like he randomly selects one of the sponges and squeezes it to
kill
the
person. Oh yeah, disturbing the shit, man.
Yeah. And then and then he reforms them into humans again. It's the cute girl, the cute ensign who got destroyed. And Kirk, like, it's such a gut punch to Kirk. Like he would have much preferred it was just the dude who got killed rather than the cute ensign. So, but still, I remember just being weirded out and like, I don't know. I guess I was a bit of a pussy, I guess. I don't know. I was a little kid. So I didn't really get into it as much until I was a bit older, like kind of high school age, which then dovetailed nicely into the Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home coming out, and then mm-hmm. like Next Generation launching, like not long after that, I think it was. And so that's when I really started to get into it heavily. But yeah, it's crazy. And now here we are 35 years later, and we're about to get a new season
of
adventures with these guys. You know,
right. So, crazy.
Yeah. Crazy. Well, and they're going to be coming to New York Comic Con next weekend too, apparently. So,
yeah, Scott, what's the details on that one?
Just that they're going to be there, but supposedly the last I heard is that they're going to be there in some capacity, but they're not doing interviews, or at least they're not doing interviews with us, with IGN or with Transporter Room 3 for that matter.
Okay.
So I don't know if they're going to just do select interviews with maybe like the trades or something, but like probably not. I mean, if they're saying no interviews, then I tend to think that means they're just coming, doing their thing on stage and leaving. So we'll see.
I'm probably going to show some great footage too.
Show some footage. Yeah. They mm-hmm. are doing interviews with the Prodigy people, which obviously their season is imminent. So the return of Prodigy is imminent. So
Right. They're
doing that. And then Sonequa Martin-Green is also, and Michelle Paradise, the showrunner of Disco, are also going to be there, but they supposedly aren't doing interviews either. And I would imagine that maybe they are, they're still in the middle of production on the new season, I guess. So mm-hmm. maybe it's less of a push for them to promote the show just yet. But that sounds like that's what the Star Trek presence is going to be at New York Comic Con. So I'll be there. We'll report back on it. We'll see whatever cool footage and announcements come out of that show. Yeah, if we do manage to get any interviews, we'll certainly run them on the podcast as well. I mean, I was hoping I was going to get to talk to the whole Next Generation cast, you know?
Yeah, like, so was I, Scott. That would have been awesome, man.
Yeah, so we'll see. It could still change. These things are often in flux until the last minute, so we'll see.
I hope it works out. But if you're going to attend, please wear a mask and have a good time.
Oh, yeah, I will be fully masked up, absolutely. Last thing I need to do is to give Sir Patrick Stewart COVID, you know, like that.
Right,
would be,
or him give it to you.
Right, yeah. I mean, if he gave me mono, I probably wouldn't mind that so much, you know.
You'd probably get what's the syndrome Picard has and all these things.
Well, Sarek had Bendai syndrome.
Bendai.
Picard had
aromatic
syndrome. Something I think like it was. Similar symptoms to Bendai syndrome, just none of the telepathic stuff.
Right.
So, but you know, we did get a kind of a reunion, or not a reunion, but a sequel to a classic Trek show this week, didn't we?
Yes, we did. Deep Space Nine returned.
Crazy
to see it. In this week's Lower Decks, they took a trip, which was more than a cameo. They took a trip to DS9 for the episode Hear All, Trust Nothing, which, yes, it's fan service. Yes, it's nostalgia porn. But it's also a borderline sequel to DS9, continuation of DS9. And it just drops you right in like nothing happened. Kira's in charge. They made some reference to, you know, Sisko earlier this season, or maybe in like the previous episode, about him working at a celestial temple.
Right.
Doing his thing there. Sisko's gone. Kira's in charge of the station. Quark is quirking it up.
Yeah.
I found Shimmerman slipped much easier and more naturally into the performance of Quark than Nana Visitor did, I felt.
Yeah, I kind of agree. Nana was good, but it felt, yeah, she felt a little, well, I mean, it's Kira doing comedy too, to some degree, which mm-hmm. is a little bit of a harder sell than Quark doing comedy, I guess, right?
Right.
Like, but yeah, I feel that for sure. So Armin Shimmerman and Nana Visitor both came back.
Yeah, I mispronounced your name. Sorry.
No, that's okay. The only reason I'm saying it correctly for a change is because I had to do that Deep Space Nine interview with them a few weeks ago.
Oh, Scott, you never talk about that.
Where I spent the whole weekend pronouncing her name correctly over and over again for fear of saying it wrong in front of her. Which
I would
then
just call her, look, NV.
So, you know, I mean, when we heard about this, they announced it at San Diego Comic-Con, right? That they would be coming to Deep Space Nine on Lower Decks. And, right. You know, you kind of wondered, like, how much will it really be on Deep Space Nine? Like, are we getting any of the original actors? Like, mm-hmm. how much would it be? But it is very much, I mean, pretty much the whole episode is spent on Deep Space Nine. On board.
Right, nice. The B story on the Doc Cerritos with a slumber party.
Right, that's Mariner right. Yeah. Yeah. And Mariner used to be stationed on Deep Space Nine. We had established that in the previous season, where there was a flashback or something where you just briefly saw that she was there. And like, sure enough, like, Quark remembers her and mm-hmm. and Kira remembers her. They definitely like maintain that continuity. Like, yeah, she's been here before.
It's
which
crazy
is kind of cool.
That originally, according to the actor who voices her, that the original script did not have her character appearing, did not have Mariner interacting at all on DS9, which, one, the character has its origins there, and two, the actor loves DS9. Like, that's shitty. So they rewrote the ending so she has that scene with Quark.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. And that worked. That was fine. Like, yeah, she still owed Quark a ton of credits, right? And mm-hmm. they make reference to the Quark's head on Kira's body hologram, which is one of the most disturbing images. Speaking of disturbing, it's a good thing I never saw that when I was 8 years old. Mm-hmm. One of the most disturbing images in the history of Star Trek. You know, like, from the get-go, like, they arrive, Cerritos arrives at Deep Space Nine, and they make a joke about, like, just fly around the station for a while, and, like,
right.
You know, and they're playing the Deep Space Nine music, and the wormhole opens, and it's like...
And the staging of the shots is similar to the opening titles.
Yeah, exactly. And it's funny, but at the same time, it gives you those Deep Space Nine chills, kind of, you know. It's like,
yeah, it was a weird mixed emotion for me because I felt my eyes warming up, know, like with happy tears, and also laughing at it all, like,
yes.
And then that pan in Ops when Kira gets off the turbo lift, and you're like, wait, That's Kira? That's Kira.
Yeah.
Pan across and they go into Cisco's office. I was just like, they recreated Ops so accurately.
Yeah. And the station itself, the exterior, I mean, the interior is too.
Rendered.
The exterior. And they really like, you know, the Cerritos used to be, I feel like it used to be a little more cartoonish looking. And I don't know if they've subtly changed the designs as they've gone along, or like changed the look of it a little bit. But like, it really like, it fit, like the Deep Space Nine very much looks like a realistic Deep Space Nine animated version, to the point where there's a couple of shots where I was almost like, wow, is that the, like, it looks like exactly like the one from the live action show. But like the Cerritos fits in just fine with it also. Like, you know, like it's not too cartoony or anything, and which I thought was great.
Not at all. Yeah.
And Cisco's baseball is still sitting on Kira's desk.
I didn't see that. I couldn't tell, but thank you for pointing that out.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Yeah.
That's great. That's great.
Yeah. So
I'm a little bummed we didn't get to see Defiant docked or the Runabout.
Well, so let me ask you, because the, you know, I mean, that could be a budget thing too, because they'd have to design the ship. I don't know. But like, when she's in Ops, when Kira's in Ops, it looks like it's all run by Bajorans now. There's no Starfleet personnel in Ops.
Yeah, yes, that's true.
So I wonder if they've stepped back. I mean, there are Starfleet people on board, and there's that Orion Starfleet person who they have a subplot. There's a subplot with as well. So there's Starfleet people on board. But like, I wonder if the station operations have been kind of handed over to the Bajorans at this point, because it is years later, and you know, it kind of makes sense that maybe the Federation would slowly want to cede control of this. It is like sort of a sovereign Bajoran thing. It's not specifically a Federation or Starfleet station, you know. So I was wondering if maybe like they don't even have a Defiant anymore, you know, like that could be part of it too. I don't know.
They do address, you know, that since the Dominion War ended and some fallout there. I'm guessing Starfleet no longer needs to occupy the station, because Cardassians ain't much of a threat anymore, right?
Right, yeah. I like how they talk about how Quarks is now franchised out, which kind of ties into Picard season one. Do you remember there was like this Easter egg when they went to that like pleasure planet and you see like this big holographic sign for a bar or a casino called Quarks, but it wasn't on Deep Space Nine. And it was like, you know, it was like, wait, is Quark not on Deep Space Nine anymore? Like, what's the deal? But it's like, according to this now, it's like, oh, Quark just started franchising out his business. So there are like 20 Quarks spread across the galaxy, I guess,
right.
different Quark restaurant bars. Morn shows up also, right?
Yeah, which is a great little, and Dabo, Dabo girls. Yeah, it's great.
yeah. Boimler is like somehow good at Dabo, but in the end, he doesn't actually care about winning the credits. Like,
right, because we don't use money in the future. And the reaction to the Ferengi bartender, what?
So now I had to actually go back and look to, and I, you know, a little embarrassed, I guess, to say this, but I couldn't fully remember what had happened to everyone on the last episode of Deep Space Nine, except that they had, a lot of them had moved on to new assignments.
Right.
Because I was wondering, where is everyone? Now, obviously Odo, we know, went back to the planet with the Founders. So that, you know, and of course Rene Bourgeois has since passed away too, unfortunately. So him not being there made sense. O'Brien went back to Starfleet to teach, I think, Starfleet Academy.
So, and where'd Bashir go?
That's what I was trying to remember. Bashir and Ezri Dax, I couldn't quite remember. Did they stick around? Because they weren't there anymore. Worf went off to work as like the Federation ambassador. I think we talked about that a couple episodes back. So it makes sense that he wouldn't be there. But I can't. Oh, and also they do kind of name drop Sisko at one point, Jake Sisko. They say something about, I want to, Rutherford's like, but wait, I want to pour my heart out to the like cub reporter up here or something right. like that.
And then you see his legs dangling.
From yeah.
The that's great. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's where Jake and Nog would always sit.
Right.
And like watch the people coming in on this, the different visitors to the station coming in. So I thought that was cool. So Jake, it seems, is still hanging around there, which is a good place to be if you're a young reporter looking for, be out on the front lot, the kind of frontier zone looking for scoops. But yeah, I can't remember what happened to Dr. Bashir or Ezri Dax. And I guess maybe we should have done our prep work and looked that up.
Prep work.
I'm going to look it up right now. Hold on a second.
I did enjoy the B story with the Orion, whose name I can't remember right now. Great. When she interacts with another Orion who says he's from...
Yeah, Tendi. Yeah. Yeah.
What's her name again, Scott?
Tendi.
Tendi, thank you.
Yeah.
That whole thing in the cargo bay, and that was very well done. That was funny.
Yeah.
That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that was. Yeah, yeah. It turns out she actually has like the... She's so nice and like... She's like ultimate Starfleet, right? With her like science and her love of...
Right.
All that shit. And it turns out she has all this pirate blood. So, and so these like kick-ass pirate abilities. All right, I looked it up. Let's see. Ezri remained on Deep Space Nine following the war. That's all it says on Memory Alpha. So I guess she left at some point, maybe. It's possible we just didn't see her, but it's also possible she was just reassigned in the years after, between the Deep Space Nine finale and this. And then Bashir, let's see if I can find Bashir real quick.
Hey, Scott, what's the matter with Wolfie?
Sorry, it doesn't mind.
That's my T2 nod to you.
And that's actually John Connor talking to his mom, his foster mother, who's at this point the T2?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Bashir, Dax suggests Bashir. I think they just, let's just say they both stayed on Deep Space Nine and then they left.
Sure.
Okay. I know Bashir was bummed out that he was losing his buddy. Yeah. So anyway, is there anything you didn't like about this episode?
Other than not seeing more of the cast, no, I can't say that there's anything I didn't like about it.
The one thing I would say, I enjoyed it thoroughly, but the one thing I would say about it was that if we're finally going back to Deep Space Nine after all these years, it felt a little inconsequential, ultimately, for Kira and Quark. Like, the story didn't really necessarily matter a ton to them. Which is fine. I get it. This is an animated sitcom that, Lower Decks by its very nature. But it felt like after waiting so long to see these characters again, I almost wish there had been a little more like emotional oomph to happened here.
Yeah, I can understand that. Sure.
You know what I mean? The shot early on where Kira is, when we first see Kira, when, as you described earlier, she walks into ops and then she goes into what used to be Cisco's office and is now her office. She finally got that office. She's looking out the window and she sees the wormhole open. And I was almost expecting there to be some kind of a glimmer of Cisco, a Cisco reminder
or something.
And I know we get the baseballs in the room and stuff, but like, I was almost hoping that that there was just a little something there about Cisco, whether it's her. I mean, again, it's an animated sitcom, so you can't get too heavy, especially like 4 minutes into your episode. But like, I mean, Cisco's with the prophets now and Kira is so religious. Like, does Kira pray to Cisco now? Like, you know what I mean?
Oh,
like,
good question.
Like if you could just see her like praying to the prophets or something and saying something about Cisco. I don't know, I don't know what it is, but I just wish there'd been that little extra something there. But you know what? So much fun to see these guys and the loving detail with which Deep Space Nine was recreated. Shax and Kira are old Bajoran war buddies, it turns out, right? Which is a lot of fun. They keep trying to one-up each other.
Yeah, that was fun.
And were those aliens that kidnapped Quark, are they supposed to be the same race as the race that James Cromwell played when...
I believe so, but they are also the race that Sisko and the crew first encounter when they take the Defiant in the search through the wormhole. So that was a cool little nod, Easter egg situation there.
Okay, very cool.
I'm pretty impressed with the middle chunk, back half of this third season. It's been a good run, and it's emotional and nostalgic level for fans. But I totally understand that there should have been a bit more emotional heft to the episode. That's a good point.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how fair that of a criticism that is to the show, but it's Lower Decks is Lower Decks. It's a very specific format, you know.
There's nothing wrong with wanting to invest that return, like you said, with more than comedic needle drop, you know?
Right. I'm still hopeful we're going to get more of Deep Space Nine characters in live action too at some point. We'll see if that ever happens. But
If any show would be great to have that legacy sequel.
Yeah, man.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah. So, but yeah, I mean, and yeah, as you said, like this, I was a little lukewarm on Lower Decks in the beginning of the season. Just not that I still enjoy it. It's fun, but it felt feeling a little samey, same old, same old. And then like last week's episode with Rutherford, where we got his backstory. I think that was last week. We got some of his backstory about how he wound up with his cybernetic implants, but also some mystery laced in there. That was a good episode that I thought worked as well, where we got to see his younger self. And now this one as well, two strong, really strong episodes. So, you know, keep it coming, Mike McCann.
Yeah. Can't wait.
Yeah. Should we, you want to move on and do
let's swing by the Replimat, speaking of DS9.
Yeah, we're already at Deep Space Nine. We might as well go to the Replimat.
I'm going to the Replimat to get something to eat.
What are you checking out lately, Scotty?
Oh, okay, I'll go first. You know, the thing about the Replimat is I start to get paranoid that I've said these things before.
Yeah, same. We should do this, but that would require adult work.
I'm going to go with Children of Men, the Alphonse Cuarón. I wanted to, not that that's a veg out kind of movie, but it's one of my all-time favorites. And it's a thing I can just put on and not feel like I have to watch it start to finish right there in the moment, you know? And I was on Hulu. I was like, oh shit, they've got Children of Men. And I watched the first hour of Children of Men. I'll probably watch the second hour this weekend.
It's a great movie.
And I love it so much. I mean, it's obviously, you know, it's about the end of the world and it's very dark, but it's also very uplifting in a lot of ways. And it's just, I mean, the filmmaker is so talented. Cuarón is just, I mean, He's just next level.
He's the best.
And I love Clive Owen. Even though I had such an awkward interview with him one time years ago. It was for that movie, The Four Feathers. Do you remember that?
Four Feathers. Yeah, with Heath Ledger.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow, Scott.
Yeah. I know. I'm old school, man.
Awkward. What happened? I don't know the story.
I've been doing junkets since your grandfather was in diapers. I can't do it. I can't do it as well as diapers. I think I asked him. I don't know. I think I just think I was young and stupid and unprepared for the interview. That's my general memory of it. And he was kind of patiently enduring the interview, waiting for it to be over. But anyway. Despite that, I think the guy's pretty great, and I'm, you know, a huge fan of The Nick, which he stars in as well. And Children of Men, it's so good. And, you know, just from the get-go, like, you know,
that wonder.
Yeah, yep.
Shop and then everything blows up. Love that movie.
Yep. And the death of baby Diego. It's like, it's just such a great setup, you know. So it actually prompted me. I'm finally gonna listen to the audiobook, because it's based on a book, which I barely was aware of. So I'm going to listen to the audiobook so that maybe that'll be my pick next time. But what's your
hope, man?
Thanks, man. What's yours?
Well, Scott, I have been doing a lot of movie watching lately, and I got to recommend the bonus features on Nope.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
Making of Nope. One, I can't remember the last time we got an hour making of bonus feature that wasn't Marvel.
Right.
Or Star Wars. It takes a deep-ish dive into making the movie. I could have watched 2 hours of it. They show the making of the UFO and the unique twist that comes with that and how they came up with that. And it's just great behind-the-scenes footage of Keke Palmer being awesome.
Yeah. So,
nice. I highly recommend that. If, okay. If you've seen Nope, watch the behind-the-scenes.
Okay. Yeah, Nope was... Nope was interesting. I enjoyed Nope.
I dug it.
I didn't love Us.
Us is like, a bumpy movie.
Yeah, like there's things I really like about Us.
A lot of it doesn't add up or shake hands.
Exactly. So I was really, and you know, my kid was I guess we had showed him Get Out right around the time Us came out, and he loved Get Out. So then we went to see Us, and he really was into Us, and I didn't really have the heart to tell him, like, it's okay. It doesn't quite work for me. But, like, he had been so excited about Nope that we all made it a point to go see Nope in the theater, me, my wife, and him, which doesn't happen that often these days. And we all really liked it. So did you actually buy the Blu-ray, or?
My friend has it on Vudu, so I watched the special features there.
Awesome. Okay. Excellent. Yeah.
Me buying, I would buy it if it was affordable.
Right. Well, that's the real trick, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So. But if those of you who can't afford it, please seek it out. It's awesome.
Yeah. Or just go on Vudu. You could probably do a 2-week free subscription on Vudu. My favorite thing to do.
Do an end run around.
Yes. Which, by the way, I was just watching that. I think it was last night or two nights ago. It just was on.
Oh, sweet.
Good old Pluto TV, Best of Both Worlds Part 1 happened to be on.
You need to be their spokesperson.
I really do, right? Like, you know, between that and the endless Love Boat reruns, I'm like, I am their. I'm keeping the lights on over at Pluto TV, I think.
You are, Scott. Well done.
Elizabeth Dennehy is so good in that. In Best of, I hadn't watched Part 1 recently.
She is amazing.
Yeah, it's so good. All right, cool. Should we move on? You want to do the red shirt?
Sue Red Shirt, who hails from TNG.
Okay.
And I do not believe we have done this individual before, Scott.
Attention all crew. Please don your dress uniforms and prepare the photon torpedo coffins. It's time for the red shirt of the week.
It hails from an underrated episode of Trek, TNG, one of my favorites, Ethics, Fane Lee. It's a deceased crew member of the D who was killed in action sometime prior to this episode. And Fane Lee is mentioned by Riker to Worf when Worf is contemplating suicide after his spinal cord gets all messed up in the cargo bay or the shuttle bay.
Yeah, yeah. The Worf spine episode. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Riker reminds Worf of Fane Lee, saying, you know, remember what happened to Fane Lee? Using Fane Lee as an example of an honorable officer who fought to live even when all hope was lost.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's interesting. I remember that. I remember the scene. I don't remember the character name drop, but I remember that scene because Riker name drops a few people, I think, in that scene, a few lost crew members as well. He's really trying to give Worf a pep talk, and Worf,
right.
Worf does not really want to hear it either, nope. I don't think.
Nope, he's not having it.
He's not going to step up the way Fang Lee did in his final days.
No, but I do love when Riker says, you want to do it? You do it. I won't help you. And sets the knife down.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. So then Worf calls his, like, 8-year-old son in to do it instead, right?
Asks him to do it, and then asks him to be strong for him and help him get through this together. Which is, I'll help you, father. Something like that.
Alexander Rodchenko for the win. Oh, yep, man.
For the win. And Fang Lee for the RIP.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we hardly knew your Fang Lee. I wonder what Fang Lee, interesting name too. I wonder what he, what his or her story.
Their gender is not revealed.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, all right. I guess that'll do it. Sort of a quick Transporter Room 3, but we had to squeeze out an episode about that Deep Space Nine return the way one squeezes out a quick episode of a podcast.
That's right. I was texting Scott about it. I said, dude, we got to talk about this. You have to. You're not ready for it.
Yeah. Yeah. Excuse me. I hadn't seen it. And you were texting me with that. I was like, oh shit. All right. I got to watch it. So well, I hope everyone else enjoyed it. Write to us and let us know what you guys thought of the return to Deep Space Nine and the return of Nana, who I interviewed recently for a very special Deep Space Nine
video. Scott, I don't think you talked about that enough. I think you really need to bubble that up like seven more times.
And Armin Shimerman as well made his return. You know, real quick, I was also wondering, do you think Shimerman wore the fake teeth when he did the performance?
Okay, I was wondering that too, because you could tell in some of the lines of dialogue, you can hear a little bit of it, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Like, I almost feel like those guys need to wear the teeth in order to find the character, you know? Like, right. After all those years of performing it that way. But yeah, write in, guys, and let us know what you thought of the episode. Hit us at transporterroom3@gmail.com. You can also, of course, talk to us on Facebook, like us there. You can talk to us on Twitter @ScottCalora, @PhilPerello. And don't forget to subscribe to us and write reviews of us on Apple Podcasts or your podcast service of choice. And visit us on Patreon. Support us there too. Multiple tiers, multiple levels, lots of promises, lots of disappointments to be found on Patreon. So, so be sure to...
That's a dark turn, Scott, for such a lovely episode. While Scott figures his shit out, thank you all for listening. We'll see you on Gravette Island.